You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, a couple of special interviews. The CEO of Cochlear, Dig Howitt, and the CEO of Car Group, William Elliott, plus the Australian share market hitting another record high. All of that and more. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Friday, the 15th of August, 2025. The Australian share market rising today by 0.7% on the S&P ASX 200, 8,938 points. A milestone reached today because it was the first time the index reached above 8,900 points and it closed at another record high. We'll have the details with Grady Wolfe from Bell Direct in a few moments. But let's start with some profit results, starting with Cochlear. The CEO of the hearing implant maker says Australia is missing out on economic opportunities because it's a less competitive place to conduct research and development. Shares in the company rose 0.4% today. It posted a higher profit and record revenues, with cost pressures in the US holding back consumers from upgrades or replacements. It will pay a $4.30 per share dividend. The company did launch what it's called the world's first and only smart cochlear implant system with upgradable firmware. And it follows 20 years of research and development, but it's calling on the government to consider tax incentives in the sector ahead of next week's economic roundtable on productivity. For more, I spoke with its CEO, Dig Howitt. Dig, firstly, how would you describe your full year results, considering you did guide lower than expected earnings back in June?
Yeah, certainly the results were mixed for the year. And it's important for us that where we have a long-term growth outlook to look at any, not get too fixated on any one year. But there were certainly some highlights in the year. The growth in cochlear implants was pretty strong, with 12% unit growth and 9% in the revenue. And we had particularly strong growth in emerging markets there, but also good growth through developed markets. And our acoustic business continues to go pretty well, with 6% growth overall, but 30% in our Osia implant, which is a new acoustic implant, or new. It's been out for 6 years now, but it's expanding around the world. And the bit that pulled us back was what we call our services revenue, which is people need replacement externals over time, and that fell for a range of reasons, part cycling COVID, part in the US where it fell the most, just some of the economic conditions there. But overall, certainly happy with the outlook for growth, which is always the key thing for
cochlear. So speaking about the US, I wouldn't mind spending a couple of moments on that. Given the global nature of the business, some of the macro issues, to what extent is US tariff policy impacting your business, and how are you going to navigate that?
So we've actually always imported to the US under a tariff code that has been exempt for tariffs and always been exempt and remains so today. So the tariffs aren't having a direct impact on us. And that tariff code is for goods for people with disabilities being exempt from the tariffs. So it's fortunate for us and good to see that exemption in place. But of the many things that are going on in the world, we've had to do a lot of work on tariffs, but it's not something that's having an impact on us now.
Okay. You also mentioned that services side of the business and the impact in the US, right? So cost of living pressures in the US has delayed the uptake of new sound processors. Are there any insights you can give me about the US consumer and thus the US economy?
Yeah, let me explain a little bit on the processors. So this is the external component of the system. People are reimbursed from a replacement about every 5 or 6 years, but in the US there is an out-of-pocket component to that replacement. So insurance pays for most of it, but they need to pay for a bit of it. And it is discretionary. So people could choose to do it this year or they could choose to do it next year. They can't go on forever because at the end that part of the system will wear out. But what we've seen just with the heightened economic uncertainty and the pressures of inflation of people being more cautious around these co-pays. And that they are pulling out. They want to order, but when they realise what they need to pay as a copay, we're seeing more people pull out than normal. So that's certainly a sign of some economic uncertainty and people just being careful with what they're spending for the moment.
Next week, the government here is holding its economic roundtable with productivity in focus. And I get this is complex, but I guess what would be your key message there?
I think at a high level, clearly we need to take action as a country on productivity and in getting a sustainable budget. At the moment, what we are doing is we are borrowing from the future, which means our children or the next generation will have to pay for that. Productivity and economic growth can make sure that there's better living standards into the future. One of the key focus areas for us is the importance of R&D and the importance of research and development in a modern economy. And when we look around the world, Australia is a less competitive place to do R&D for big companies than many countries in the world. So we would like to see some action taken there. And just why big companies? Because big companies aren't that big. They're over 200 people classified as a big company. But companies like us have choices about where in the world we choose to do our research and development. We do two-thirds in Australia, and we're very proud of that. But we are about to reach the point where the government incentive to support that R&D cap out, and we have countries all around the world saying, come and do your R&D in our country, because they know it creates high-paying jobs. It often then leads on to manufacturing. So one of our messages to the government, and one of the things we'd like to see, is make Australia a more competitive place for big companies to do R&D. And the numbers are clear. In the last decade, big company R&D has fallen by 25%, and it's $2.9 billion less R&D being done in Australia by big companies. Why is that important? I mean, obviously, companies like us create a whole bunch of jobs here. But if we look at the top five companies doing intensive R&D in Australia, people who have worked at those companies, have learned about R&D, have learned about innovation methods, they have gone on to start 1,800 companies in Australia. 1,800 startup companies, and that's the real value of having big companies. But if you have those big companies doing less R&D or not doing R&D, you don't have that spillover of these people starting up companies. And that, I think, should worry us all from the vibrancy of the Australian economy and the potential of the Australian economy into the future.
And what kind of policies would encourage R&D?
Yeah, so it's largely around the incentives that government set. And so we've actually had a report done and there's a way to change the incentives, which are budget neutral over the decades. So it's not just hand out money, nothing comes back. But it is largely around tax incentives, whereas that's the R&D tax incentive that can be streamlined and simplified and uncapped. At the moment, we say do a certain amount of R&D in Australia, but please don't do too much. And we just won't get big global companies doing R&D in Australia while we say that. And the second thing is then having an incentive to commercialise technology in Australia. And there's more than 20 countries around the world that have differential tax rates. If you do R&D, you do the manufacturing, you get patents on your R&D, and you do that all in one country, they offer a lower tax rate. And that's working. We can see that in other countries are attracting R&D. In Australia, we don't have programs like that. But it is, the analysis shows we can do this. We can add $7 billion to GDP. We can add 0.1% to productivity growth, and it can be budget neutral over a decade.
That's Cochlear CEO Dig Howard. We'll return to that interview at the end of the podcast. We still have to ask him about artificial intelligence and how the company is using that. But in the meantime, we'll switch over to that of Car Group. Its new CEO, William Elliott, started in the role today. Earlier this week, the company posted a 10% increase in full-year profit to $275 million. For more, Stephanie Youssef spoke with Car Group CEO William Elliott.
We're really happy with our results. We've delivered double-digit revenue and earnings growth for the fourth consecutive year, which has been an incredible result. So revenue growth of 12% and EBITDA growth of 12% in constant currency, which are the two key metrics we look at. And I think the most pleasing thing is that across all of the markets that we operate in, so across Australia, South Korea, Brazil and North America, the results have been excellent in all markets. So we're very pleased with the consistency of the performance. And most importantly, we continue to be a great place for people to to buy and sell vehicles, which is what we're all about, and making that process as efficient and as easy as possible.
Car sales are often used as a barometer of economic health and of the consumer. What do you think they say about both?
Good question. I mean, demand for vehicles on our platform is still quite strong, and that's probably the best reflection of consumer intent. One thing that we are seeing is there's been a little bit of a shift in preference from demand for new cars to demand for used cars. And we're seeing that is probably a reflection of cost of living pressures, given interest rates have been elevated for some period. Obviously, the reduction in interest rates that we've seen more recently should help that demand over time, but we have seen a very resilient consumer across our carsales.com platform.
Ahead of the government's roundtable next week, there's been some renewed commentary about a potential road tax for EVs. What are your thoughts about that? And do you think it could deter people from buying or taking up EVs?
Where really supportive of anything that gets people into efficient vehicles, and we want to make sure that there's incentives for people to get into electric vehicles, because we support a clean emission future. And that we think is, obviously we need to also be fair in terms of who pays for the road taxes. One thing that could potentially be looked at over time is whether or not the tax would be better across a broad-based tax like GST to support something like the roads, rather than fuel excise, which would be potentially fairer. And so one thing we are certainly pushing on our side is making sure we facilitate the buying and selling of electric vehicles. And that's something that we can do in terms of making our contribution to a clean emission future.
And the move to cleaner energy cars, so like EVs, how would you describe their take up at the moment, and what needs to be done to see more?
It's interesting. What we had seen is probably 2 or 3 years ago, the interest and consideration on our side on car sales, we'd seen quite a significant growth in people thinking about an EV for their next car. And then over the probably last 2 to 3 years, we've seen that decline. And that's probably been for reasons around, worries about resale value, the price of electric vehicles, and the choice. Interestingly, in the last 6 months, we've actually seen consideration for electric vehicles tick up a little bit, which has been good to see. And so people considering buying an electric vehicle as their next car has grown for the first time in some time. And I think that's a reflection of the choice coming into market. So there's many new manufacturers, many new models. And so I think price, and obviously, choice is a really important thing in trying to grow the electric vehicle market. And I think the other thing, obviously, is, charging infrastructure is incredibly important. One of the biggest issues for consumers and why many of them are choosing hybrid cars rather than electric vehicles is for convenience, and making sure they have the option to use, dual fuel for long trips. And so that's obviously going to be an important part in creating incentives for people to drive electric vehicles.
Another hot button topic is AI. How is Car Group using AI, both consumer facing and in your operations, and what does it mean for your workforce?
Our focus for artificial intelligence in the business is all about improving the consumer experience. And there's many ways we can do that across our platform. So one of the ways we're doing is to, when you're searching for cars, is to personalize that search experience so you can try and find the vehicle you're looking for faster, in a more convenient way. We're trying to reduce the number of bad actors on our platform by using artificial intelligence, because people come to our sites because they're trusted places. We can also engage with consumers using things like conversational chatbots, because often it might take some time for our dealer customers to speak to the consumer. And in the meantime, we can speak to the consumer through artificial intelligence to give them more information about the vehicles on our platforms, things like The availability of test drives, things like finance. And so we think that AI has the ability to really improve the experience for the consumer on our platforms across the world.
You're stepping into the CEO role after 5 years as CFO. Firstly, congratulations.
Thank
And I'd
you.
like to ask you what areas of the business do you see as top priorities for growth or improvement? And what do you hope to achieve in your first year as CEO?
No, thank you. Look, it's a real honor and a privilege to become the third CEO in the business's 25-year history. I've been in the business for a long period of time. So I've been with CAR Group for 10 years and I've been the CFO for 5 years. And so I understand the business incredibly well. And the strategy that I'm going to have as the leader of the business is one of continuity and evolution. And Cameron McIntyre, who's stepping down as CEO, has done a tremendous job. So I wanted to acknowledge his incredible contribution to the business. He's transformed the business from largely an Australian business to a truly global business, and it is very well positioned for growth. We operate in very large markets, so we operate in the US, in we operate in Korea, and we operate in Brazil. And so what we're doing is really taking the intellectual property and technology that we've developed in Australia and putting that into these large markets, which are some of which are less mature from a digital perspective. And we're certainly growing very well. And I'm really excited to lead the business into its next phase of growth.
That's William Elliott there, the CEO of CAR Group, speaking with Stephanie Youssef. We will return to Dig Howitt from Cochlear in a few moments. But first, let's talk about the markets, because the ASX 200 had another great day, closing at a record high at 8,938 points. That's a rise of 0.7%. With the details, I spoke with Grady Wolfe, a market analyst at Bell Direct. Grady, so the ASX hit a record high close four times this week, and every single day this week it actually also hit an intraday high. What's driving investor sentiment at the moment?
It is a crazy ride right now, and investors, what we're calling it at the moment is the hated bull run, because valuations are kind of out the door. They are sky high, they're eye-wateringly high, and so investors are really overlooking valuations, seeing that there is certainty on the horizon. We have tariffs. There's more certainty around tariffs now and clarity around that. We have the imposition of the tariffs, so we know what their impact on inflation are. We have the rate cut environment. We have a risk on back for investors. So there's just a lot to like about the market right now. So while valuations are high, investors are still seeing there are opportunities in the market, and especially with reporting season right now. We have seen quite a lot of companies meeting expectations. A few beat, but more have missed than have beat. So that's something to consider. But investors are very quick to buy into those ones that have met, even at a low base, because we came into this reporting season with a very low base. So there's a lot to like about the market, and I think there's still tailwinds to come.
We'll talk about reporting season in detail in a few seconds, but first, there was some economic data coming out of China today. What do they say about the economy and the implications for Australian investors?
It's still not great there. And so what we had today was obviously industrial production year on year rose less than expected and a decline on last month. Retail sales also fell on last month. So those two are really indicative of what's going on in China right now. We've been promised this material stimulus out of the Chinese government for going on 2 years now, and it simply hasn't come, and it hasn't flown through to material recovery in what we need to see for economic growth to rebound in the world's second largest economy. So what that means for investors here and Australians here. For investors, it means that the companies with exposure to China, we saw Treasury Wine Estates this week have a bit of issues there. But with exposure to China, you're seeing differential preferences from consumers and obviously subdued demand continuing to flow through to the earnings results for a lot of our companies. Like the big miners are expected to report subdued demand and that impacting earnings this reporting season. And then on the outlook front as well, heading into FY26, we're going to see dampened demand is going to hurt earnings again. So what we need to see out of China is this material stimulus package that has just not come. It's been promised time and time. I've lost count of how many times it's been promised, but it's just promised and it's not delivering. So until we see that material stimulus and turnaround in China, it simply is not going to flow through to anything good for Australians right now.
Reporting season rolls on. I just spoke to on the podcast the CEO of Cochlear, Dig Howitt. Which were the ones that you kept an eye on today and why?
Cochlear was one that I definitely kept an eye on today. Now, their results were, they weren't too bad. They had a 0.4% rise in profit. It was the lower end, but that's what was expected. And for a company that's on such a high valuation, investors aren't punishing it that much. Their results were pretty good. They met expectations. They were what we're seeing. So the share price movement was minimal. And that's because stronger earnings are predicted in FY26. So again, that met expectations, strong outlook, that's ticking all the boxes. And so the market didn't really sell enough today. But also baby bunting today. Like what can these companies do wrong? And a time where there's such headwinds in the macro front for especially consumer discretionary stocks, the niche retailers have surprised to the upside again. Look at JB Hi-Fi, look at Temple and Webster soaring this week. And then Nick Scali as well, and now Baby Bunting. So Baby Bunting, they had profit NPAT for FY25 rocketed 462%. So that just says that their margin pressure, so they have had no margin pressure, they've actually expanded margins in a time where a lot of companies are reporting contracted margins. So their profits are going through the roof. Their outlook's really strong.
What do you make of reporting season so far? And have there been any key trends emerging?
Yeah, we've seen companies that more missed than beat over the last week, and that was due to conservative guidance that were heading into the season. So there was a lot that we were kind of expecting this reporting season, but a lot that we were thinking that we just need this certainty to hit the ground running for FY26. So dividends have been a key area. Companies that have maintained dividends or even increased dividends have really experienced double-digit share price appreciation throughout this reporting season as a thank you from investors for keeping their capital payout policies, whereas other ones who have cut their dividends really have been punished. On the outlook front, we've seen investors looking for really some certainty, so some guidance ranges, and companies that previously have given guidance ranges that remove it this reporting season, again, are being punished quite heavily. Now, interestingly, I've seen a lot of management changes coming through, and investors have been taking that as a sign of uncertainty. So we had Terry Smart, obviously, at JB Hi-Fi. We have different companies that are seeing the helm change, a board change, a management change, and investors are taking that as a sign of instability or uncertainty heading into FY26. And if there's no clear reason why the CEO is departing, that's taken as even more uncertainty. So what we wanted to see and what investors want to see is just some form of certainty after such a long time of volatility and uncertainty. So that's another key theme that we're seeing emerge as well. Niche retailers, as I mentioned, they're continuing to shoot the lights out, and investors are buying back in on the back of results and especially on outlook with strong starts to FY26. And that's kind of what we're seeing at the moment, but there has been conservative outlook. So what we expect is there to be a number of upgrades to be announced in FY26 because a lot of companies are under-promising in hopes of over-delivering.
And so finally, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, there's a shift to risk on again at the moment, but in the small to mid-cap space, obviously the major players, the ASX 100, ASX 50, the valuations are through the roof, and growth, as we've seen in this reporting season so far, growth is set to be minimal, low single digits, mid-single digits, if you're lucky, for a lot of these big mining companies and big blue chip companies. So the areas that we're seeing that are worth the investment, are worth the hype right now, and the undervalued small to mid-cap space. So the companies that play into the niche retailers or your copper space, for example, where the supply deficit for copper continues to expand, and we're seeing not enough producers come online. So with this global movement into AI and green energy transition, those haven't gone away. Those two key themes of the market are continuing to fuel tailwinds for the market. So copper is definitely a space we're seeing. But yeah, the small to mid-cap space is looking pretty red hot right now, and we're excited to see where it goes in FY26.
That is Grady Wolfe there from Bell Direct. Let's return now to my interview with CEO of Cochlear, Dig Howard. Wanted to ask him about the direction for AI and how the company, the hearing implant maker, is using it. You're in the business of helping people, new technologies and the use of AI. You recently launched a smart cochlear implant system. What can you tell me about the technological advancements coming through and how AI is being used?
So first of all, with our new implant, and then on to AI. So we're really excited by launching the Nucleus Nexus system. It's a smart implant, the world's first and only smart cochlear implant. What does smart mean? It means that it has upgradable firmware. And you think about an implant, that's pretty important. So someone gets the implant for the rest of their life, technology will change. Whether it's a child that's got that implant for 80 years or an older person for 20 years, technology will change. Up to now, the implant hasn't been able to be changed. Now, with the same hardware, with new firmware, as technology changes, we maybe find better ways to help people hear music or in noise, we can upload that firmware to enable them to hear better. So we're very excited by technology, and it's a result of 20 years of consistent R&D here in Australia. On the AI side, lots of opportunities for AI. One of the areas is this hearing and noise, which is difficult for all of us as we get older, and particularly for people with hearing loss. We already have automated ways of suppressing background noise in our products. With AI, we can take that a step further to really using AI to process the sound and the environment and suppress noises we don't want to hear and focus on voices. That will be an advantage. And also in care, one of the things for aging societies, like most of the developed world, is the burden of care and healthcare to look after people as they age is growing, but the number of clinicians is not growing at that rate. A way to supplement those clinicians is AI, and to enable them, to make them more productive, to enable them to focus on the things where their clinical skills are really valuable, and to take out some of the more routine tasks and put them into AI. So we're working on that with our clinical software for cochlear implants that audiologists use to program each individual with their cochlear implant. There's parts of that process that we can take AI and have AI do, and have those audiologists, whose time really valuable, focused on evaluating people for a cochlear implant, which isn't something that AI could do at the moment. That's where we really need their skills. So lots of opportunity, I think, to really lower the cost of healthcare as we age and to really leverage clinician skills by using AI.
Is there any new research you've done on the growing link between hearing loss and cognitive decline?
Yeah, there's some amazing research going on around the world on this one, Ricardo. So this all started in 2011 when Professor Frank Lin at Johns Hopkins published an article showing that there was a very, very strong correlation between people with hearing loss and cognitive decline. The more hearing loss they had, the worse their cognition was. Now, that's correlation, not causation. What studies have been doing since then is to look, does treating loss change the rate of cognitive decline in older people? And there was Frank Lin did a follow-on study that did show for people at high risk that if their hearing loss was treated, their cognition declined more slowly than untreated. There's also just been a publication out of Korea which tracked 50,000 people with severe to profound hearing loss over more than 10 years. What that study showed, and it then measured the incidence of dementia in those people, what that study showed was that people who got a cochlear implant, the rate of dementia was no different than people with normal hearing, because it compared this to people with normal hearing. But for people with severe to profound loss on hearing aids, their rates of dementia were significantly higher than people with normal hearing and people with cochlear implants. And people with that level of hearing loss and no hearing treatment, their rate of incidence of dementia was even higher again. So this is an observational study. There's always more research to be done, but it's things like this that give us confidence that the growing body of evidence will support our growth by showing that hearing loss is really important to treat as we age, to make sure that we age in a healthy way. And as this evidence grows, hopefully people will see this evidence and will make sure that they are getting hearing tests and getting treatment.
And what about society attitudes towards deafness? Is that changing?
Look, I think certainly towards hearing loss overall, I think it is changing, but there is more to do. We all see hearing aids much more, and people wearing hearing aids much more than we did 20 years ago. As far as cochlear implants go, you see there's an Apple emoji. There is a Lego character with cochlear implants. We've seen on Love Island and The Bachelor, people with cochlear implants. So it is becoming awareness is rising. I think we still have work to do to destigmatize hearing loss. I think just last year in Apple AirPods, Apple has had their AirPods approved as hearing aids. So you can test your hearing with your AirPods. You've got AirPods, AirPod Pro 2, and then have those AirPods adjust sound for your levels of hearing loss. Some things like that are fantastic because it's a low-cost and acceptable way for people to test their hearing and to aid their hearing. And that helps destigmatize because there is still a stigma around hearing loss, whereas there's not one around wearing glasses and vision loss. And hearing and vision loss should be treated just the same way by society. So it's improving, but we have more to do.
That is Dig Howitt there from Cochlear. Don't forget, if you enjoy the podcast, to give it a rating or review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and to click that subscribe button. Profit Results continues next week. We'll have plenty more, so join us then.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision. This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.